Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Is it a coincidence that Jeff Blair has covered two perfect games? Or should Dennis Martinez and David Cohn be giving him the full credit he deserves? This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're back. Scotty Morrison. Hockey Central will join us at 11:15, and then Jim Fox at 11:40. He's a TV analyst with the Los Angeles Kings. You can follow him on Twitter at JimFox19. He'll be along. Talk about the defending Stanley Cup champions who are in town on Sunday. Big weekend of NFL football ahead. Got off to an interesting, if not necessarily thrilling start last night. Low-scoring game, Arizona and St. Louis. The Arizona Cardinals winning, losing quarterback Drew Stanton in the process. But by winning, they have really, really heaped the pressure on the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle and San Francisco playing on Sunday, one of the big games this weekend. We are very pleased at this time to be joined by Jory Mittelstadt. He is, of course, host of The Bottom Line presented by BetTheGreek.net. You can hear it right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sundays from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Jory, thanks a lot for doing this. And as I said, as if that San Francisco-Seattle game needed to be any more important, Arizona's, they really upped the ante, didn't they?
They certainly did. And man, oh man, what a coaching job being done in Arizona by Bruce Arians and their defensive coordinator, Todd Bowles. They lose Carson Palmer, Drew Stanton. Yeah, he's fine, but he's a backup for a reason. Then they're down to their third and fourth quarterbacks, pretty much for a lot of the second half yesterday, Ryan Lindley, who's horrendous. And yet they find a way to pull it out and not allow, not allow a touchdown. Just an incredible, incredible coaching job. And I saw a quote today, although he didn't expand upon it, from Jared Cook, the Rams tight end, who said, "We were outcoached," which was very interesting, but he wouldn't expand. I'd love to hear more of that. But tend to agree, because that was one heck of a job last night and throughout the season, frankly.
And essentially, Jory, Seattle's in a position now where I don't know if they can afford to lose a game.
No, they can't. Most likely, if they want to win the division anyway, they still control their own fate, because after San Fran on Sunday, they have the Cardinals the following week. And, with that win, they would equal their record, assuming Seattle wins Sunday, and they would have the tiebreaker for the division. So it's all still right there in front of them for the Seahawks.
Jory Mittelstadt is host of The Bottom Line presented by BetTheGreek.net. You can hear it Sundays from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sunday night game, Dallas and Philadelphia. Anytime these teams meet, it's more than just a football game. I don't know about that, but it's certainly the enthusiasm, the intensity is jacked up an extra degree, and that should be the case here again, shouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. While this won't necessarily decide the division, the winner will have a huge leg up, especially if it's Philly, because they'll have the sweep over Dallas, which is the first tiebreaker, and be a game ahead. So it's certainly a humongous game for both teams. Dallas still has Indianapolis at home next week, which isn't an easy game before they finish with Washington, who already beat them this year. So I would give the slight edge to Philadelphia. But something tells me in these divisional games, and if you'll recall on Thanksgiving, Philly went to Dallas and spanked them pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dallas has a lot to prove. I think the main issue is that the Dallas defense is really starting to look a lot like last year's. Part of it due to injury, part of it due to just an overall lack of talent. And Philly, like I said, they just ripped them up on Thanksgiving Day, so they're going to have to make a lot of adjustments, and I'm sure they're going to look at what Seattle did last week. The problem is they don't have the same personnel or anywhere close to Seattle, who absolutely dominated and shut down the Philly offense. It was the worst offensive output since Chip Kelly has been head coach for almost 2 years. They're averaging well over 400 yards a game, and I think the total was like 132 total yardage. It was just complete domination by the Seahawks defense, but I don't expect that to repeat itself. And I think if Dallas is going to win this game, they're going to have to win a shootout, because the Philly defense has been improving, and Dallas is going to have to do what they've done most of the year when they've been successful, and that is run the ball, control the clock, and put points on the board when they have the opportunities. They cannot afford to come away from good drives without any points, and in particular touchdowns. I think it's an uphill climb for Dallas, but as a Cowboy fan, I'll be rooting hard.
Jory, when's the last time a two-win team has gone on the road in December and been a favorite? I have not seen that very often, I don't think. And lo and behold, your New York, well, they're not nor your New York Jets. The New York Jets are 3-point favorites over Tennessee and Tennessee.
Yeah, that one's kind of, and funny, it opened at 1 and all the money was on the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And while we all know the Jets are a two-win team and pretty much deserve that record, they may have left one or two others out on the field, but that might be a stretch. But Tennessee is a train wreck. I mean, they are just awful, and now they lose Mettenberger and got to go back to Locker, who they're going to get rid of at the end of the year. They can't stop anybody. And Tennessee, for at least the last, I want to say, 6 weeks, and I think they've lost six or seven, seven in a row. Yeah, I think they'd lost six going into the mm-hmm. game last week against the Giants, and the Giants had lost seven. And that was no contest. So I think actually the spread's right, because at least the Jets for the most part have competed and they play some defense. Tennessee is just awful everywhere. I don't know that I'd be willing to lay points with the Jets as a favorite on the road against you, me, and nine of our friends, but it might actually be the prudent play because Tennessee is just horrendous.
Jory Mittelstadt joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Cincinnati and Cleveland. Some books have it as a pick 'em. Johnny Manziel making his will start for Cleveland. That's a fascinating game, isn't it?
Oh, on so many levels. Pretty much across the board, Cleveland's a 1-point favorite mm-hmm. at the moment. I don't think Bobby Hoyer left the coaching staff much choice in terms of making the switch. Despite the fact that one of Hoyer's better games in the last 6 weeks was that win they had on the Thursday night at Cincinnati, which sort of sent Cincinnati and kind of wayward, and then they recovered and then got blown out in the fourth quarter last week at home to Pittsburgh. I mean, Cincinnati's a screwy team, and we were talking about this on the show last week. We need like a screwy box, because there's about 10 teams that week to week you absolutely have no idea what's going to happen. I think Cincinnati falls into that category. Of note, a few things on this one. Their best player arguably on defense, or certainly in the top three, and a key to their defense, talking about the Bengals, is linebacker Vontaze Burfict. He is now out for the season. They've put him on IR. And when he is not on the field, their defense is simply not the same. And we saw some of that in particular last week with what Pittsburgh did in really blowing them out late. But the loss of Burfict is huge. On the flip side, look, everybody's waiting to see what Johnny Football has.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he can be much worse than Hoyer has been in the last few weeks, where he's, I want to say, the last four games, one touchdown, eight interceptions. That's just not going to cut it. And that was a very winnable game last week at home to Indy. Indy did everything to give them that game, but when it counted, Andrew Luck took him down the field for the winning touchdown. And I think Manziel will be okay. I expect there to be at least one big mistake, But I think you're going to see why he was a first-round pick. I think he's going to move around a lot, and he moves better than Hoyer, although Hoyer moves okay. And the key will be, how does he connect with Josh Gordon, who after the first game back, when he put up some big numbers, even though he was targeted a ton and put up over 100 yards with Hoyer, that was the game they won at Atlanta. Hoyer and Gordon haven't been on the same page, and ditto for Jordan Cameron, because those are the two best receivers that Cleveland has. And if he can't get on the same page with them, then I think it's going to be a long day. If he can, I like Cleveland's chances at home against Screwy Cincy.
Green Bay and Buffalo is another game. Obvious playoff implications for the Bills. They have to continue to win. Now, this is a matchup I didn't realize. Aaron Rodgers has not played in Buffalo. He's facing the best defensive front in the NFL. I mean, they average a sack like every 10 snaps or something like that. What is Aaron Rodgers going to have to do against the Buffalo Bills defense?
What you would say is you want to be able to run the ball effectively.
So Eddie Lacy.
Right, except Eddie Lacy is a big question mark. Read this morning that he's probably going to be a game-time decision. He hurt his hip Monday night in that win over Atlanta, and the quotes are directly from him that he's got to kind of wait and see how he's going to be. So Starks is a good back, and they have DeJuan Harris, I believe, is their third back, and haven't seen a whole lot of him. But Lacy is upper tier, and if he can't go, that's a huge loss, because if you become one-dimensional against Buffalo, as you talked about with their front, you're in trouble, because they are going to get to you. They're going to get to the quarterback, and they're at minimum, they're going to pressure him and make him get rid of the ball early. Now, we all know that Aaron Rodgers is at the top of his game, and it may not matter, but if you follow the Bills, strange things happen in Buffalo when they're at home, because their offense, we all know, is pedestrian at best. But they find ways. They make plays on special teams. They create turnovers, and they get to the quarterback. And so, yeah, everybody will expect Green Bay to waltz in there, given the role they've been on, and put it to the Bills. I don't see it that way. And there's been a number of close road games this year for the Packers. They're a different team at home versus the road. And secondly, as we saw last week, after some improvement from their defense, it was a sieve against Atlanta. Now, Atlanta is not a great team, but they do have a good offense and good talent there, and they can put up points. It's their defense that ranks last in the league and is why they're 5-8. So, again, while Buffalo's offense isn't Atlanta's even, and doesn't scare a lot of people, you got to be very wary of playing in the conditions in Buffalo and the strange things that happen. I think Buffalo's a really live dog here, especially if Lacy can't go. I still think Green Bay will find a way to win, and Rodgers will be the catalyst in that regard. But I think Buffalo's worth a look at +4. And in fact, that line opened at 5.5, and it's been pretty much all Bill money. And the Lacy stuff pretty much came out this morning, so I don't think it's impacted by that. So I find that interesting.
Jory, good of you to do this as always.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. Enjoy the weekend, enjoy the games, and look forward to our next chat.
Absolutely. That is Jory Mittelstadt. He is host of The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net. Sundays, 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Follow Jory Mittelstadt on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at Jory Middle. Going to give away a couple of tickets to that aforementioned Packers-Bills game in Buffalo on Sunday. This will also include exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. And if you're a Rogers customer with the Share Everything plan, remember, you can roam like home for just $5 a day. All you have to do is text TRAVEL to 222 to enroll. And Tim and Sid are going to be giving away some tickets this afternoon as well. We've been doing it all week. So I've got a pair of tickets to see the Bills play the Packers in Buffalo on Sunday, plus exclusive pregame hospitality, the Rogers Tap House. You're going to have to answer a question, though, in order to get the tickets. You know that Ralph Wilson Stadium, the home of the Bills, where you will be going if you win the tickets. We know, we typically call it the Ralph. Everybody calls it the Ralph. That's the nickname. What was the nickname for War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo? It's where the Bills played before moving. It was a famous stadium, and it had a great nickname. So, the first caller through at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, with the correct answer, the nickname of War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo. First caller through with the correct answer wins a pair of tickets to see the Bills play the Pack on Sunday in Buffalo, as well as exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. And don't forget, if you're a Rogers customer with a Share Everything plan, you can roam like home for just $5 a day. All you have to do is text TRAVEL to 222 to enroll. Tim and Sid will give away a couple of tickets as well. First caller through, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. The nickname of War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo. A tremendous nickname. Provide the answer. You'll get a shot at, well, you won't get a shot. You'll get a pair of tickets to see the Bills play the Packers on Sunday. The Detroit Red Wings will be in town to play the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday. It's hockey night in Canada. Just in time. Just in time. Wouldn't you know it? Just in time for the Red Wings trip to Toronto. Reports surfacing yesterday that the Red Wings and Mike Babcock are moving closer to a contract extension. Now, you know, of course, that Babcock is in the final year of his contract, Detroit. And it's for the whole season. There's been a sense in Toronto. And admittedly, it's probably blue sky and, you know, perhaps overly optimistic, but there's been a sense that somehow Mike Babcock is destined to be head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, yesterday, Mike Babcock and the Detroit Red Wings both tried to pour cold water on the report, which was in the Windsor Star. Mike Babcock did say that he's happy in Detroit. He has told people, and in fact, he was quoted before the Leafs Red Wings game earlier this week, that he liked where the team is right now. He thought this might be his best Red Wings team since 2009. Mike Babcock certainly hasn't, at least overtly, made it seem as if he is in a hurry to get out of Detroit. Nonetheless, this Windsor Star report yesterday, coupled with the fact that the Red Wings are in town Saturday, it certainly is going to be a storyline during the weekend. Scott Morrison is one of our Hockey Central analysts. You can follow him on Twitter at MorrisonSnet. Scott Morrison joining the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Jeff.
Nice timing for this.
No kidding.
What do you think, Mike? What do you think the first thing went through Mike Babcock's mind when he heard this was? Oh,
here we go again. I mean, the irony is that he didn't want this. They weren't going to negotiate during the season because they didn't want it to become a distraction. Well, guess what? It's popped up how many times now over the first quarter of the season, a little more than the first quarter of the season. So, and then obviously, you know, on the eve or a couple of eves before coming into Toronto, where inevitably it's going to come up again, although there may be a cautionary note from the PR staff on Saturday morning, mm-hmm. not to bring it up at the morning gathering. But, you know, Mike was pretty adamant that nothing's imminent. You know, I think there has to be some form of a framework of a deal that was put on the table at the start of the year, something, a starting point to work with and sort of suggest where the team was coming from and what it had to offer and would start with an offer. And you know, as Mike said, and Kenny Holland has said this when we've had him on Hockey Central at noon many times, is that, you know, they sit together on planes, they have dinner together on the road, their families socialize at times. Inevitably, there's going to be conversation. And is it a negotiation or conversation? It's, so much of it is semantics. But I guess the only thing we can take from what Mike said at the moment is that he hasn't closed the door on going back, that's for sure. And in his mind, at least, there's nothing imminent. So we'll just sit back and see how it plays out. And I think a part of what all of this has been about this year is I think he really did want to get a sense on where this team is, where this Detroit team is, where the organization is overall, and whether it was going into a rebuild or whether it was just a refit and they have a chance to be good again, and I think it's the latter.
I was going to say that, you know, we're so used to the Red Wings being the Red Wings and being good, or at least being a factor. When you look at this team and you see the performance they're getting, even and I think Mike Babcock made the point earlier in the year. He looks at a guy like Glenn Denning, and he sees kind of a Chris Draper, Kirk Maltby, I guess maybe more a Kirk Maltby kind of guy. He's seeing things he's seen in previous good Red Wings teams, isn't he? And I think a lot of us are. There's a lot to like about that team. The youth, it's got a nice blend of youth and experience, but there's just so much to like about that team right now.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, I think the one thing a lot of people going into this season were wondering, was this the year that they would finally miss the playoffs? Were they taking the big step back? And I think we forget that they had a ton of injuries last year to very significant players. But what we also saw was their younger players who have had time in the minors, not their typical. They weren't 19-year-olds coming into the NHL. These were guys that had 3 and 4 seasons under their belt in the minor leagues developing in the Detroit system, had their opportunity to come up, the Nyquist and the Tatars and whatnot, to come up and play and show what they have, and were excellent. And then you get healthy, you get Jimmy Howard, struggled for half the season. He's come back as strong as he's been. So you all those elements together, and yeah, once again, they're a very solid hockey team.
Scott Morrison joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The Leafs, an interesting piece. I was talking to Gord Stellick about this in the Sun today. Rob Longley's piece, just sort of suggesting that, you know, despite the fact that the Leafs have this gaudy little run, there's nobody appears to be fooling themselves. At least nobody in management appears to be fooling themselves. They're looking at some of the shortcomings of the team. Scotty, are there that many shortcomings with the 7-1-1 club? I mean, maybe I just haven't been around the Leafs enough, but I look at 7-1-1, I'm kind of happy with that, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't overanalyze the wins, is what coaches often say, but, you know, you can't be oblivious to if there are shortcomings or there feel like there's shortcomings in your game. And I guess what everybody's pointing to is that there have been nights during that run where the goaltenders had to been the first star and the runaway first star, where they're getting outshot. And I guess the Detroit game is really the most sort of blatant example of that, or lopsided shot count and whatnot. And people are wondering, is this just pointing back to what happened last season? And then inevitably it caught up with them. I guess the fact that they're well aware of it, that they're identifying that they feel there's still some shortcomings to their game, and you're going to try and you're working at trying to fix that and improve it, suggests that at least you're looking at it in the right way, and hopefully from their perspective you can fix it. But I think there's a lot of good things to the game too. I mean, they've been good at protecting leads. They're perfect leading after two periods on the season, which is a change from a year ago. They're getting more balanced scoring. They have the ability when they want to roll out 4 lines and not be afraid to do that, and not be feel like they're going to get overwhelmed by the opposition. So they've been able to move different players around on their lineup as well, up and down, to give them different looks. So I think there's been a lot of improvement there. Defensively, they're still very much a work in progress. And yes, they got to get those shots against down, but as long as you're trying to fix it, I think that's half the battle. And, you know, a comparable, you could easily say, the Montreal Canadiens, when you think about the start that they got off to the season, giving up early goals all the time, having to fight back and battle back and overcome deficits to win games, and they were doing it, and everybody thought this was great. But internally, they sat there and said, we've got to find a way to be better in the first period of games, or eventually this is going to catch up to us, and it did to some degree.
Scott Morrison joining us on the Jeff Blair Show, shifting focus a little bit away from the NHL to the World Junior Tournament. Good news for Canada during practice yesterday. It appears as if Connor McDavid's now talking about being ready to play in an exhibition game ahead of the World Junior Championship. As I said, it's clearly good news for Canada. Are you surprised at how fast or how quickly he's been able to recover from that injury? And Scott, do you have some concern that maybe he's being rushed in this situation?
No, I don't think he's being rushed. I mean, this guy is a special player, as we all know, and there's a much bigger picture and bigger future ahead that you don't want to put him in a situation where this becomes an injury that could impact him down the road. I don't know if that's even possible, but you're going to be cautious about bring him back, not to put him in a situation where he could maybe break the hand even worse and be out for the rest of the season. But it feels like, when I think back to when he first met with the specialist, that this is in the wheelhouse of the time frame that they had suggested at that point for recovery. And from those who know more about the doctor side of it than I, the bones that were impacted apparently are ones that do heal fairly quickly, and you can do things with them if the hand's properly wrapped and the rest of it. So it sounds like it's a fairly normal recovery.
Yeah, and if all goes well, he should be able to play on December 21st against Sweden when Canada plays Sweden at Canadian Tire Center in Ottawa. Yeah,
the underdog Canadians, apparently.
Well, yeah, there's not a lot of people picking them for gold, is there?
No.
Is there anybody picking them for gold?
Well, and internally they're calling themselves the underdogs, and I think it's just trying to take the heat off, especially playing on home ice. So it'll be interesting to see how this group responds.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that as much as Canada likes winning gold in the World Junior Tournament, if it can win gold when it's an underdog at home ice, there'll be some storylines.
Yeah, no question. They'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Scotty, thanks for doing this. Have a good weekend, man.
Okay, you too, Jeff. Take care.
Scotty Morrison of Hockey Central. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at MorrisonSNet. Speaking of Hockey Central, today, Millard, Stellick, and Cox will be doing Hockey Central 12:10. They'll be joined by Bruce Boudreau of the Anaheim Ducks. So again, Hockey Central 12:10. Bruce Boudreau joining Millard, Stellick, and Cox. We have a winner. It didn't take very long. Travis, was the first caller through? Got it? Third or fourth? Okay. The skill testing question for the Bills tickets was the nickname of War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo. And it was the Rock Pile. And, of course, there's a book written. There was a book written called Rock Pile about that stadium. Thaddeus Bassett in Hamilton, second day in a row. Somebody from Hamilton wins a pair of tickets to see the Bills play the Packers in Buffalo on Sunday, plus exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. If you're a Rogers customer with the Share Everything plan, you can roam like home for just $5 a day. So when you're going down to the States, just text TRAVEL to 2222. And you'll enroll and tune in to Tim and Sid this afternoon for your last chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Bills and the Packers play in Buffalo on Sunday, along with exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. This is a big game for the Bills. The Bills have to win to keep their playoff hopes alive. And it is Aaron Rodgers' first game in Buffalo against a pretty good Bills defense. Thaddeus Bassett from Hamilton, you and a friend will be going to see the Bills and the Packers play. Jim Fox is the LA Kings TV analyst. Jim Fox is set to join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, so the LA Kings will play the Montreal Canadiens tonight after beating the Ottawa Senators last night in Ottawa. Only the Kings' fourth road win. And they'll be in Toronto on Sunday to play the Leafs. I find that surprising. Looking at the NHL standings, it was the Kings' fourth road win. In the West, only the Edmonton Oilers have fewer wins. They, of course, are 2-8-4. The Colorado Avalanche also have four wins. So clearly the Kings a different team at home where they're 11-4-1 than they are on the road. Jim Fox is Kings TV analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at JimFox19, and Jim Fox joins the Jeff Blair Show. Jim, thanks a lot for doing this. What explains the home-road difference for this team?
Well, first of all, probably games played.
Okay.
Kings have played very few road games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one area where they're probably a little bit behind. But no, I think that there has been some issues there. I think the first thing that you look at is the specialty teams, and you know that's the thing that just has not been working on the road as much as it has at home. Actually, the power play has not been that good. Injuries early on,
mm-hmm.
I think that contributed because, you know, when you're on the road, you don't get that matchup that you want. You don't get the last change. So when Kopitar went down and Gavrik went down, that 70s line with Carter, Pearson, and Toffoli were on fire. But when they went on the road, the other team was able to kind of lock them down and get them out of it. So it's got a couple of those things just made it more difficult to get wins on the road.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing worse than when there's never a good time to have injuries. But when you're on the road, when you're on the road and you have injuries and you don't get that last line change, boy, it's hard to disguise when you're thin, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly right. And even, you know, back on the blue line, they had some injuries. And, of course, Slava Voynov, they have a suspension. So, yeah, you're putting guys into situations they probably wouldn't normally be. And then if you do take a couple penalties, and all of a sudden you're thinner, even more so. What happened, specifically early in the season on the road was early penalties. The Kings would take two or three early in the first period, and then you'd be behind the eight ball, and you're chasing the game. And like I said, you've got rookie defensemen and penalty kill situations. And so you can look at those as excuses or reasons. You want to be deep, but you know what? Under the salary cap system, if you're like the Kings have done two of the last three Stanley Cups, it's tough to build depth. You can't. I mean, your draft picks aren't high anymore. The guys that you put on waivers are picked up because, you have a winning culture and everyone wants those guys. So it's very difficult. And now you're stuck with a situation where you probably only have maybe 7-8 NHL-type defensemen. And if you have injuries, you got to work with it.
And, of course, when you're winning Stanley Cups, nobody makes less money. It's funny how that works out.
Yeah, you know what? That is the number one issue with the salary cap. You've got to re-sign those guys. And in all honesty, Dean Lombardi's done a phenomenal job locking up the core of this team. He still has one big piece coming up, and that's Anze Kopitar. So that's obviously the best forward the Kings would have all around, and you got to lock him up. And he's got some restricted guys, the Toffolis, the Pearsons, those types of guys. So, yeah, it's a challenge. And, you know, the Kings are in a situation where they are one of the teams that are just hoping and praying that the salary cap goes up as much as possible, so it'll make it a little bit easier to fit everyone in.
Jim Fox joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How has this team adapted to not having Slava Voynov?
It's a great question. They still miss him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do. Spending time in your zone, you know, Slava, that easy first pass, or like very few defensemen, he's that double threat where he can pass or skate it out of trouble. And I think that is something that you don't teach. You kind of, you hopefully draft those types of players, but very few have the skill and excellence that a guy like Voynov did. So it's one thing that you try to replace. Braden McNabb, who was, you know, picked up in a trade last year, comes in, young player, 22 years old, bigger, not the same style as Voynov by any means. And that's a good example of what's happened and how you have to adjust. So Voynov goes out, and he's an attacking defenseman, he's a puck-carrying defenseman, he's a mobile defenseman, and you replace him with a stay-at-home guy. And Braden's done a great job. He's actually really come on the last 15 games and playing very well, but it's not the same type of player. And I think you know, and I'm hearing it now, we've been hearing it for about a year and a half now, the biggest issue in the NHL, I hear from players, I hear from coaches all the time, every single time someone talks, it's this: you've got to get the puck out of your zone as quick as possible. Talk about goals against. They don't talk about defending. They talk about spending less time in your own zone, and that's moving the puck. And when you miss a guy like Voynov, that's what you miss.
I would have to think. I mean, I know that when the Kings played Montreal last season, they had a 6-0 win. Martin Jones is in goal. Is he expected to start against Montreal?
That's a good question. He's, I would say, It's up in the air. I'm watching right now, and I see Martin Jones playing soccer with a guy, so he's not skating.
Mm-hmm.
That would not be unusual for Jonathan Quick. Jonathan Quick, over the years, many times does not go on the ice in morning skates when he has the option. So it's up in the air right now. I think coming in, you know, going into the game last night, I think everyone was penciling in Martin Jones for tonight against Montreal. Normally, a goaltender likes to get on the ice, right, and feel some pucks in the morning. He would have that opportunity with a couple guys, but it looks like very few, if any, guys are on the ice right now.
Jim Fox joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. I mean, this team is so... When you win a couple of Stanley Cups, I think you probably... Jimmy, I think you tend to take a look at the regular season maybe a little differently than other teams do. I mean, you understand what it takes to get through all the way to the end and win. And is this team different now than you know, now that it's won a couple of Stanley Cups, compared even to the team after it won its first Stanley Cup? Does it just take the regular season differently? Does it look at winning streaks or losing streaks differently?
I think they do. I think there is that quiet confidence, especially when you're going through the down times, where you're not panicking yet, so to speak. When many teams might start to panic, this group believes that it will get it together. They feel they've proven it before in the past that they can get it together. So they don't go crazy when things are not going well. And you know what? It's not a bad start for the Kings. It's just one of those where they're not clicking on all cylinders so far. And most of their top players, you know, Carter had a hot start, but he's kind of cooled off. Kopitar has been in and out. It's really interesting. The best way I can explain it is this. This last road trip we're on right now, on our pregame shows on Fox Sports West, they have a series that the Kings have put together, Stanley Cup Moments.
Mm-hmm.
So they're replaying a series-by-series feature in our pregame show. It lasts about, 4 or 5 minutes. I find myself fixed to it. I'm watching it. I'm feeling it. Oh, last year in San Jose, last year Anaheim. Just feeling what's going on. You watch it. Then you look up and you're ready to play a regular season game.
Mm.
It's like, ugh. Now, they're professionals. I like to consider myself a professional in the job I do. But there is an emotional aspect that is very difficult to recreate. And, again, you want to call an excuse. I know everyone calls it a Stanley Cup hangover. There is something to it. It's no disrespect to any team you're playing. That has nothing to do with it whatsoever. It's no disrespect in I think we're going to win because no. It's just that you've come from, three seasons in a row. They went, two Stanley Cups. They went to the Western Final in the other season where you're going deep and every game you're playing is so emotional. And if you're a fan, I guess you hate to hear this, then it's just a regular season game.
Right.
And that emotion, it's tough to come up with.
No, I would think that would just, Jim, that would just be human nature, especially... when you're traveling, when you're taking a swing to the east or something like that. I just think the teams that win and teams, the Chicago Blackhawks are probably the same way too. I mean, they just have there's an innate feeling of what it takes to win. And I think that allows guys to maybe look at, as I said, a 2 or 3 game winning streak and just kind of go, eh, I think you understand what a snapshot of a particular part of the season is when you've gone on to win a Stanley Cup. You really do realize that a segment is just that. It's just a segment. The bigger picture for the Kings is different than it is for just about any team in the NHL. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, in the West, though, it's tough. You probably have 10 teams that feel they can win the Stanley Cup, and they're not far off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so tough in the West. And I think the East is getting closer this year. I think this is the first year I think we're seeing a swing back the other way, where now there's 3 or 4 teams. I'm just rating teams. I'm just watching teams. What do I know? I don't know anything. But I thought there was only one team in the East last year that could win the Cup, and that was the Boston Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, didn't make it to the final. So that was one of those things that kind of stands out. But just back to what you were saying, the word value comes to my mind, and I think that's why like the guys like Pearson and Toffoli and McNabb, younger guys, And Pearson has fully won the Stanley Cup last year, but they're still young. They're the guys that have had a lot of value for this team this year because they still, to a certain extent, feel they have to prove themselves as an NHL player. And the way they played it, you go, why? I mean, they're doing everything great, and they are. But, they're at a different stage in their career, and that's important for any team to always have that youth and enthusiasm. And regardless of what the grind was the year before and the emotion, you do have a certain segment of your team, the young guys, that can pick it up.
Jim, it was good of you to do this today. Thanks so much.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank
Take care.
You. Have a good one.
You too, man. That's Jim Fox. You can follow him on Twitter at JimFox19. He is the TV analyst for the LA Kings. The Kings in Montreal tonight to play the Canadiens. They beat the Senators 5-3 last night. The Kings did in Montreal tonight to play the Canadiens. 5 o'clock Sunday. Rogers hometown hockey, 5 o'clock Sunday. The LA Kings will be here to play the Maple Leafs. And the Leafs, of course, playing Saturday against the Detroit Red Wings. Congratulations once again to Thaddeus Bassett in Hamilton. You have won a couple of tickets to see the Bills play the Green Bay Packers in Buffalo on Sunday. You'll also get exclusive pregame hospitality at Rogers Tap House. Tim and Sid, you know those guys. They'll be on at 1 o'clock today, and they will have one final chance for you to win a couple of tickets to see the Bills and the Packers, and as I said, also a pass to exclusive pregame hospitality at the Rogers Tap House. That's it for the Blair Show for this week. Stay tuned for Hockey Central at noon. Millard, Stellick, and Damian Cox, 12:10. They will be joined by Bruce Boudreau. And, of course, Tim and Sid will be on from 1 to 4. And then Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. The Friday Roundtable will assemble. So have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday. It's been the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.